chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Nicole Eunice on the show today. Nicole is a speaker and leadership coach and the author of The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Nicole, I am so excited to have you on the Something Extra podcast today. Thank you so much for making the time. I know how busy you are.
Oh my goodness. There is no place I'd rather be. I love having a conversation with a new friend, especially around topics that we both love and hopefully will be super helpful to our listeners too.
Well, and I want to give a couple of shout outs here. I want to thank our mutual friend, Kimberly Wright.
Yes, absolutely.
Because she's the one that connected us. Thank you so much. And then you're in Richmond, Virginia. And when we first talked, I said, Nicole, do you know my friends, Anthony and Julie Strange? And you go, yes, they're good friends. So I love that.
We did that thing where we're like, you probably won't know this person since there's a million people in Richmond. And I was like, I do know those people. I'm so glad we played this game.
It's crazy. And it just shows me that it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. So we've got so much today to talk about, Nicole. But I do want to just talk a little bit about your growing up. I know you grew up in a military family. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up as an Army brat, which means we moved every 2 or 3 years. I was one of 4 kids, and my youngest brother was adopted from Korea. And at the time, particularly in the 80s, it just wasn't on the scene like it is today. So those were really big markers in my family's life and a huge part of my formation, kind of the good and the bad, and just what's led me to the space that I'm in today.
Yeah, very good. Well, I know that you've done all kinds of things. You have been a counselor, you've been a pastor, you've authored multiple books, but I want to talk a little bit about your book, The Struggle is Real. And I told you it really piqued my interest because the struggle is real, isn't it?
It is so real.
It is so real. And you talk about all the different struggles. But, you know, the last 2 weeks, our youngest daughter had her wisdom teeth out and was prepped for 5 crowns. I was thinking, I'm a nurse. I'm the shipping and receiving department. I'm in the restaurant, complete with food inventory, purchasing, preparation, serving. I'm an Uber driver.
Yes.
You know, then we're trying to do our jobs with excellence. We're trying to take care of our people if we're leaders. I mean, there is so much. And I know for me, mm-hmm. we are body, mind, and soul. And as leaders, my friend Jeff Henderson says, the best thing we can do for our people is bring an inspired self
yes.
to the workplace, an inspired and whole self. So it's so important to take care of our body, mind, and soul. And if I don't do that, I know that I'm just going to be in trouble. But your chapter 3, I was laughing my head off. The title of the chapter is The Truth, Who We Really Are. And you tell a story that was a defining moment for you as a little girl. And yeah. It's hilarious. So tell this story, if you would, to our listeners.
You know, the reason that we titled The Struggle is Real as such is because that phrase has such resonance in our culture, because we use it a lot of times when people say the struggle is real, they have this weird duality with it where they're like, I'm trying to tell you that I'm having a hard time, but I also know that these are like, you know, quote, first world problems, like my life's okay. And so generally, especially leaders, if you've got a high capacity person, they're going to couch their troubles in all of these other words, right? Like, I know my job's great and I'm so grateful for my children. And they're going to say all these things that they've got. But what they're really trying to get at is, I'm not really okay. The wisdom teeth and the multitasking, this, I'm not really okay. And what I try to do in the struggle is real is make it okay to not be okay. And rather than minimizing and shutting down our everyday frustrations, actually being curious about them, which is a theme that extends into the miracle moment, being curious, being our own scientists, really trying to understand, what is it about these particular things that make me react or act or, you know, get anxious or get insecure? And one of the things that I point to particularly, which I'm grateful for my years as a therapist, is really how these roots have these like tangly roots, whatever that struggle is that's at the surface, generally has this deep-seated root that takes us back to something that is a time in our life where we may have defined our identity, where as a sort of a response to something that we experience, we make commitments to who we're going to be and how we're going to operate in the world. And my story that I tell in The Struggle is Real is about this perm that I got. And I love it because I'm like, I can definitely just age everybody on the podcast who knows what I'm talking about. Guys had perms, girls had perms, everybody had perms. And our family didn't have a lot of money. My mom didn't work and we were military. So there just is not a lot of money, especially to go around with four kids. So I wanted this perm, but there was no way. I don't even think I'd ever been in or seen a salon at that point in my life. I just only knew like home perms. And so saved up my money, so excited. Everything that this perm was going to mean for my popularity and for like my look. And I was probably fifth, sixth grade. And it was horrible. Like, you can read all about the whole story, but what you need to know is it is the world's worst perm. And there has never been a head of hair that took to a perm like my hair took to a perm. It just went into a million little slinkies, like just all over my head. It was not the look I was looking for. It did not look like the girls on the videos or on Saved by the Bell. It did not look like that. And what happened was not so much the perm that was the problem, but this merciless teasing from a kid in my class and really bullying. I mean, so bad. I just remember having such dread, just a pit in my stomach about showing up at school. And I didn't tell my parents and I didn't tell anyone else. And I kind of just hid it away. I was ashamed.
Kind of dealt with it.
And one of the things that I talk about in The Struggle is Real is how a moment like that, which is a very minor, obviously in the world of problems, a minor problem. Really, what happens though that's so important to understand is that we can make these sort of whispered agreements about who we are. And for me, that agreement was like, do not mess up, do everything perfect, don't trust anyone. And that became defining themes through my life from that moment forward, with a lot of other situations and challenges that I don't talk about in the book. But there were other incidents that sort of led me to build that as my shield, as my identity. And that's not something I could have named then or even 10 years more. And you're out there living your life and you're like, why do I react this way? Why am I a perfectionist? Why does everything have to go right for me all the time? Why am I a control freak? Why am I so terrified of my kids at the bus stop? And you ask those questions and you start to go backward to find those places where you can say, I'm allowed to rewrite my story. I'm allowed to re-engage with the world differently than the decisions that I made at age 10 or 11, 12 about what the world is about. And so that's where the book goes to a deeper place of really trying to work through some of those false beliefs that we carry and how we can let go of those limiting beliefs and move into a free and full story in the present.
Yeah, that's so good. And it is not easy work to go back and start rewriting your story. You say in there, you know, that psychologists have studied the tendency of humans to describe their life in a story and that we are actors, agents, and authors.
The idea there is this is just your free therapy for the day. Anyone who's listening, this is super helpful, especially if you're raising children.
Yes.
This idea is that we work through these developmental stages where we can see ourselves as actors. And this is where a lot of people get stuck when they feel like they're living in like a victim role and they're repeating the same things over and over again. It's like, hey, I don't get to write the play. I don't get to choose my place in it. I just have to take on the role that I'm in. So I'm the middle child, or I'm the addict, or I'm the divorcee, or I'm the whatever. And we hold on to these roles, and it's as if the world operates around us and we just have to be that thing. So a lot of times coaching and counseling, depending on the situation, are designed to help you recognize that and ask the question, is that what I want to do? Next up we move is to an agent, where we feel like we're actually able to direct the play a little bit. Like I have action that I can take. So when I decided I'm going to be perfect in order to not get hurt, I went into agency. Now, the agency was false, because not only am I not going to be perfect, I'm definitely not going to not get hurt. Like those two things don't work together.
Sure.
You can't be perfect enough to not get hurt. You can't be nice enough to not have conflict. You can't be strong enough to never experience pain. So when we operate as adults and we look back, we can be like, oh yeah, I put those things together. So many people in our world right now, Lisa, are putting together this idea that if I control everything around me, I have nothing to fear. One of the reasons why I think we are in a collective crisis as a person here in America is because we have, I think, been lulled into believing that I can control and secure my environment in a way that means that there will not be pain. That is patently untrue. It's always been untrue. But now that we're in a more out of control time, we feel like decisions are being made for us. We don't know what next week's going to bring. We don't know what next year's going to bring. Is this the end of our country as we know it? All of those kind of things. We're all having to actually deal with the truth. The truth has always been there.
Yes.
The truth has always been there, but now we're all dealing with it. So we're in that. But being an author is about the ability. And, you know, I come from a faith-based background. I really believe in the way that God has written the story of the world is the way that we're living it. So this idea of being an author is being able to like co-author with God. Like I can write the story. I can be part of writing the story, and I can look back at my story and I can't change it and I don't have to minimize it, but I can find the redemptive threads in what God has done in my life and in what closed and open doors have meant. And there's much coaching outside of the faith that does the same thing. The way you build resilience in people is to help them understand and narrate their failures and their pain in a way that helps them find redemption. Now, we as Christians know that is the story of the gospel. That's always been the story.
It's all redemption, yes.
But outside of Christianity, that's exactly what people do to try to help people move forward with their life.
That's so beautiful. Said. Well, I would encourage people to get the book. And I mean, we just touched the tip of the iceberg there, Nicole. But I want to move into The Miracle Moment, because that is your newest book. And it is just full of so many wonderful things. And, you know, it's divided into three different parts. Part one is really about developing self-awareness, and goodness gracious, do we all need more self-awareness? I'm like, you know, some people say that that is the thing that the leader needs the most, is to be self-aware.
Absolutely.
Part two is really about self-expression. And then part three is self-respect. So we've got so much to cover here, but we do need to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Nicole Eunice.
Sounds great.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals. So if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
So Nicole, now I really want to get into your latest book, The Miracle Moment. And here's how you define it. The miracle moment is a moment in a conversation when you want to shut up, give up, or blow up. And instead, you lean in. It's not the moment you react to being hurt, misunderstood, or treated unfairly. It's a moment after the initial reaction, when you change course and respond differently.
Well, that's it, guys. And usually when we talk about miracle moment, people are like, oh yeah, I get that. And what we're really talking about with a few more words is It's a moment where you feel yourself have a reaction. You're in a conversation, let's say you're in a team meeting, and someone says something and you have this reaction where you feel yourself get either powered up, especially leaders, or really withdraw and just be like, this isn't even worth it. And something goes on and you begin this dialogue where you feel missed, or you feel disrespected, or you feel disregarded, and you're having a reaction. And the miracle moment is not about making those reactions go away or making those moments go away, because we know that conflict is a part of life. And in fact, to really get the best out of your team and the best out of your work, you're going to have to anticipate that, of course, if you ask people to come to the table with their opinions and with their whole story, everything that they have or haven't processed, you're going to have moments like this where you're like, how could we be here again? You know, and it's about that reaction, actually engaging just with a very, very like sharp arrow into that reaction. And as leaders, taking those reactions as moments where we can be transformed, where we can be changed in the way that we lead. And the unofficial subtitle of the miracle moment is how to get what you want, which is okay. Never a title that they let me use. But what I want to say to leaders is, hey, you're leading for a reason. You're passionate about your work. You're passionate about other people being successful. You're passionate about the mission that you're about. This is not about navel gazing and just like trying to rock everybody like babies. It's actually about saying, when you're aligned with your emotions, your ability to express your emotions, and your ability to take action that back up the things that you've said, when you're in alignment, you're a person of integrity. People will find you safe. They will be able to follow you, and you will get more of what you want out of life. So at the end of the day, if I'm going to be really ruthless, that's what this is actually about. Now, the journey there is going to take you through love. It's going to take you through fear. It's going to take you through change. But the destination is actually for you to experience life in a better way than you currently are.
Yeah. You've got a quote that I absolutely love. We won't do it perfectly, but we can make progress. That is the wonderful thing about being human. We are flawed, but we're never finished. So getting better at this, this is what this is all about. You know, it's not shirking back from those difficult conversations. It's really, like you said, it's about leaning in and saying, you know, how can I respond differently so that my leadership style, my leadership can be transformed through this? And we know so many times we're transformed where we're in the crucible. You know, it's not necessarily on the mountaintops where we're really transformed. Well, I want to talk a little bit in chapter 3. The title of this chapter is Positioning Yourself for a Miracle. You talk a lot about the art of winning. And Larry Bird says winners, number one, recognize their God-given talents. Number two, they work to develop them. And then number three, they use the skills to accomplish their goals. So we all understand as leaders, we all understand, you know, if you're leading an organization or if you're a business owner, we all want to win.
Right.
But you also kind of talk about sometimes we all understand competition, but in relationships, it cannot be competition. And you've got stories about this, Nicole, even in marriage.
Yeah, I want to take your leader personality and all that you desire and all that drive and basically reframe it in the correct direction. Because a lot of times that ambitious, successful, competitive personality ends up setting itself against people. So we're sort of in a one-to-one kind of battling it out this way. And one of the things that I'm just going to like give away to you guys is the couple of big things that I'm seeing in leaders that I work with. And one of those is decision fatigue. And the other is just a weariness where they're carrying personal kind of family weight alongside of their organizational weight. And I do think that there is a way forward for both of those things. And this to me is the opportunity of the moment we're in, the opportunity of this crisis. Because a lot of us, and I'm sure Lisa, if we went through your leadership journey or mine, there will be all of these twists and turns where we just kind of said yes to things, or maybe we found our passion. We were like, I'm going to try this thing. And the next thing we know, it's our organization. We have people working for us. We a lot of times haven't had a pause to really search our motivation and to understand our calling on the level of our character and who we're becoming. And because of that, we end up just reacting to decisions all the time. And we might have these undercurrents where we're trying to prove ourselves, we're chasing after success in whatever that looks like for you. For a lot of us, that's money, security, or likes. I want to be seen as an achiever. I want to be seen as successful. I want to have the money that shows that I'm successful. Or I want to make sure that I have security and everything around me is secure. And before we know it, that's actually what's driving our leadership. We're living from that motivation. And so chapter three is really about saying, hey, you need to know who you are and where you're trying to go from a character perspective. If you're able to name three or four things that you say, you know what? Companies come and go. Teams come and go, positions come and go. But what I want to be is this. When I move through my work and my career, when I'm 70 years old, I want people to be saying this about me. And I really try to help my leaders find those words so that when they're having a bad day or their life is like the decisions are weighing on them, it's not about getting that day perfectly right. It's about asking that question. Am I moving toward who I'm becoming? Am I becoming more collaborative? Am I becoming more open-hearted? Am I becoming more courageous? And now we've got this different filter with which we can see our work. And it's not so much about every single moment doing it successfully or doing it right. It's about who you're becoming as a leader, really believing that you're called to that place in this time. And that out of that, you're going to grow. And subsequently, the people around you are going to grow. And then P.S., usually things are successful. That's the crazy thing. It's like, right. That usually makes things successful.
Yeah.
So my desire is to help us reframe in this moment. We do have a moment in sort of our desperation of anxiety, of depression, of fatigue, of weariness, of fear, to stop and say, wait a second, what really matters to me? What really matters and who am I becoming and how can I orient my week, my month, my day around that desire and then let the chips fall from there?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're doing things and we're out of alignment with our principles and our core values.
That's right.
We're talking offline about the decisions and the average adult makes over 35,000 decisions a day, which is mind-boggling to me. They could be very simple things like what I'm going to wear today, or they could be super complex. It's like, how are we going to pivot our business during this pandemic so that when we come out on the other side, we'll continue to be sustainable and relevant, right? But the decision fatigue is really real. One of the things that you said is to get to the point where even in these decisions, am I really the one that needs to be making this decision right now? Sometimes as a leader, we need to empower our people.
Sometimes we need to empower people. Sometimes our decision needs to be to not make a decision.
Right.
My colleague and I like to talk about that. It's called tactical patience. You know, it's, I don't have enough information. I don't need to make this decision right now. And the reason that I try to help leaders find those values is because if every decision feels like it has equal weight in your life, you are a French fry by now. Like you cannot possibly be functioning. And one of the things we want to do is, okay, say, wait, I want to be a person who, and you can name those values. Again, these are just internal, these are personal. I want to be a person who always cares for my people really well. I want to be a person who's a work in progress. You can decide these things. It'd be like, okay, based on those are my big rocks that go into my jar. Now I can take decisions one at a time. And maybe one of those things, I want to be good to my people, means I need to invest in a coach for myself. I've got to come to work showing up not reactive. Maybe I have to do the courageous work of asking some people on my team, hey, how are you experiencing me? And what would be helpful to you? One of those like key things as leaders is our presence. And a lot of times we aren't aware of how amazingly influential our presence is to the people around us. Real leaders have presence, and you probably aren't as aware of your presence as others are.
Right. Again, I love going back to your quote that we are works in progress. We're going to be flawed, but we've got the opportunity as human beings to work on these things.
Lisa, do you play a musical instrument?
I do.
What do you play?
The piano.
Okay. So you've got a little bit of basic knowledge about the piano. And if I said to you, hey, let's learn to play the guitar, chances are you are evolved enough as a human being to realize that if you're going to learn to play the guitar, there are some things that you know, but there's a lot of things that you don't know. And you don't expect to show up like Santana on the guitar in practice one.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, when it comes to leadership, and relationships and the ability to sort of be relationally aware. A lot of us as leaders have been successful because of who we've been. And when who we've been no longer works for us, we have this crisis where we think, I'm not allowed to be a work in progress. Like, I'm supposed to have already known how to do all this stuff. I'm supposed to be Santana on the guitar already because I know how to play the piano. And in any other field or industry, if we stepped into it, we would show up humble and we would show up like, I don't know what I'm doing. Can somebody help me? I'm so happy to hear from others. And I think as leaders, even if you're at the apex of your career or you're in your sunset years or whatever you are, if we could have that mindset shift where it's like, I have so much to grow and so much to learn, you'll show up not expecting to be so perfect at everything you do in that gap space that's called humility. There's so much life and growth, and you won't feel so wound tight about being great at all of this stuff. You can actually just be a work in progress. It is incredibly freeing.
That's what I was going to say, Nicole. You know what that equals? Freedom.
Yes.
Well, I want to talk about one other thing before we get into something extra, because I mean, I know that all of us have experienced the anxiety and the despair right now. I don't want to gloss over this because it's so real. But one of the things that you say is that one of the reasons is that people do not have real connections anymore.
Well, and I mean, certainly some of us do, but in general, I think we've entered into a season where the combination of technology and then the pandemic have sort of blown apart any of our maybe structures, rhythms, routines where we were in real connection. And I think as leaders, particularly, we have a responsibility to our people, to the next generation, to ourselves, to be really caring about that for ourselves. So you can't lead other people into vulnerable, courageous connections if you don't have any. I think leaders sometimes think they're exempt from this, and actually it's going to deeply impact the way that you lead other people if you're not connected, if you don't have a crew. You know, you've got some people around you. And I know, Lisa, you do work with YPO. I know you're part of things that help community be fostered, but I think as leaders, we need to understand and recognize that we ourselves have to grow in our relational intelligence, because we've got people at our workplaces and in our homes that will lead in the future who may not have the same access to these tools, who may not have the opportunity to grow in the same way. And we're going to need to model what it looks like to connect with people. And we're going to have to model what vulnerability looks like and what it looks like to show up for each other. I think it might be one of our great challenges right. of the next generation is how we do that. So I don't have answers for that. I just want to name it and say, is there a place in my life? You know, I was just with a group of people a week ago at a work meeting. And out of that meeting, I felt a desire. I looked around to the right and left and I was like, I don't know how I got here, but I'm the most experienced, oldest person here. And I reached out to these four other female leaders to say, do you guys want to start meeting? Let's just start meeting on Zoom. And I didn't want to do it, you guys. My life feels full, but it's not though, you know, because I'm trending in the same direction as everyone else. Less connections, less vulnerability. So ask yourself, am I positioned to be the one who is the gatherer of people? What's just like one thing I could take on? Is it a once a month Zoom call? Is it a ladies' night? Is it a guy's golf time? Whatever. Maybe I'm the one who gathers. I don't have to be the one to make it successful, but I might be the one to invite and start that process of creating that community sense again with a few people that maybe God has placed in my life.
Yeah. The research shows that not having connections in your life is more dangerous than 15 cigarettes a day, obesity, or high blood pressure. It matters. And to your point, Nicole, I love what you just said. As leaders, we have to model that for our people. You know, if they see us never having those heart to heart and those connections in our life, then they're going to think, well, they're doing fine. I mean, we need to model this. So just as Nicole said, think of that one thing that you can do, you know, to foster more connection with people. So, Nicole, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
One of my mentors used to always say, more is caught than taught. And I think that as leaders, truly just the simple act of saying, before I enter this room, I need to settle my presence. The way that you show up in a room, in a Zoom room or a real room, people catch it. What I would say to the leaders on this call is you are more influential than you think. People are watching. And what that should do is not freak you out, although it might, but it actually should make you be like, my holistic sense of what I'm about and what I'm here to do is actually more important And this is just a little trick for me, is if my mind is not in a good place and I'm on the way to lead something, I've got like a playlist. I listen to certain songs. I get myself into a space because I need to bring the presence, because the gift of a leader is their presence. Yes, you're smart and that got you where you are. Yes, you're skilled, that got you where you are. But at a certain point in your leadership, it's actually your presence that matters more than anything else. You're not going to just solve problems anymore. You're going to inspire. You're going to make people want to show up for their job. You're going to make them want to be better than they are. And to do that, you've got to enter in with your full heart, your full mind, body, heart connected. And if that means that you've got to be a person who's very disciplined about your working out, very disciplined about your friend time, listens to a song before you enter a room, steps into a bathroom stall to take 5 deep breaths, do it. That is my something extra, is take those few moments to change the way you show up, because people are catching what you're doing much more than what you're teaching.
What you're doing there when you do that, Nicole, is you're positioning yourself for a miracle moment.
There you go. Yes, you are.
So tell me, what are you really most excited about right now? And how can our listeners get involved, Nicole?
Oh my gosh. Thank you for asking. Yeah. I mean, after you launch a book, you know, there's really about a year of just getting to talk about the book and different pieces of the book. So I'm super excited to do things like this where I get to talk on podcasts and on my own podcasts. But yeah, the thing I'm most excited about is people picking up the book, checking it out. The book's got a trade book that is accessible for everyone. There's also a separate Bible study if you're more interested in the faith part, and that Bible study has a video series with it. So my hope in my heart is that in the work that I do, the teams that I consult with, we can bring these principles to bear in a lot of different places, and that people would experience freedom and be like, thank you for putting more tools in my relationship toolbox. I like only had one tool and I didn't realize that there were so many tools that I was missing that I get to practice and use now. So that's really my heart.
Awesome. Again, the book is called The Miracle Moment. You can get it from Amazon. Uh-huh. What is your URL?
Sure, NicoleEunice.com. You can come and find out all about my podcast, other books, teaching, consulting, all of that, some speaking, and maybe I'll be in your town. Who knows? So yeah, you can check all that out there.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much again. This has been, I feel like I've had my therapy for the day.
Yay! So,
thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.